This is a discussion, Tattva Darshan, about Guru-Shishya Sambandha, the relationship between Guru and Shishya. And one thing came to my mind, and I thought we could discuss this, more questions and answers type thing. There's an offense called Guru Avagya, and the 10 offenses of the Holy Name. So Guru Avagya, what does this mean, this term Guru Avagya? But the word avagya means what? It means to disregard. It's the mood of disregard. Like if someone says, what do you think of so-and-so? I don't think much, you know. It's like, they may have a question. How do you regard so-and-so? Regard means how do you feel towards? How do you feel towards? What's your inclination? Oh, I have great regard. We have this term in English. I have great regard for him. So then the opposite of that is disregard. I disregard him, I disrespect him. So the word guru avagya means to disregard the guru, or to not respect him. So then I was trying to think, because this is an offense in our chanting of the holy names from Padma Puran. There's a list of 10 offenses. And I was thinking this might be one of the major causes of offenses, is that, now what is the cause of disregard or disregard, kind of forgetfulness, is that, let me ask this question, because I feel that when there's disregard, that means that you get too distant from the spiritual master. So now I want to ask a question. Disregard means too distant from the spiritual master. It doesn't mean by space either, heart and connection, whatever. So and as seva is unlimited meanings of seva, so I just don't mean by direct seva or even intimacy of space, so don't get confused. So what does it mean how do we keep a close connection with the guru? Because I feel disregard when you get sometimes you get too far away from the guru, so then you disregard him. If you get too far from the guru, from his heart or his mind or whatever, you can tend to disregard the guru or disrespect the guru, and that will become an offense by the definition that we establish as a meaning of disregard. Guru avagya means disregard or disrespect. It's not just to not follow. It's also, because that's like an external thing, don't follow the rules. Okay, but there's more than, the guru is more than just rules and regulations. It's a sambandha, it's a relationship. In a relationship, there may be rules and regulations, like a marriage. I'm married, and there are rules and regulations of marriage that are given in Dharma Shastras, etc., the duties of husband and wife, etc. But the relationship of marriage is more than just rules. Oh, you're a very good husband. You're following all the rules and regulations. But are you actually caring for are you loving your wife? And your attitude is, and there's some more to it than just rules and regulations. So I think it's clear on that. So then I wanted to ask the question. So when you disregard means you move somewhat distant or get forgetful of the spiritual master. So my question is, how do you always remember the spiritual master? How do you stay near the spiritual master and maintain your regard and respect to him? Because the tendency is when our regard for the guru and respect for the guru goes down, then we get distant. And distant doesn't mean, as I said, Barcelona, Delhi, Bombay, whatever. But distant in terms of heart distance or our regard or respect. Familiarity breeds contempt type of thing. Not exactly the same line of concept, but it breeds that. So now that's who wants to answer my question? How do we always maintain respect and regard for the guru? Then when we guru avagya also means disrespect, disregard. That means becoming ungrateful, losing our gratitude or becoming ungrateful towards Guru. How do we maintain our gratitude toward Guru? And when we maintain our gratitude or gratefulness towards Guru, then we automatically don't disregard him or disrespect him or have any distance from him. in terms of the relationship. If you always remember the gifts, if you always remember the gifts that the Guru gave you, you can never be ungrateful. Your God is the gifts. I mean, whatever you were, that's the gifts that your karma gave you. Whatever you were, those were the gifts of your destiny. Your punyafala, your papafala, the gifts of your sins are the gifts. the miserable gifts of your sins are our sins, let's say. Or the beneficial gifts of our good deeds. So always remember the gifts. For example, it's like you could use a material example. Say you're living in this huge, big house. And you have this huge property. And you don't ever think about your father and hardly speak about him. And then your mother may be surviving because your father, say, died. And your mother says, you never talk about dad or remember dad or anything. You ever realize, you know, what's going on here? You say, who gave you this house? Oh, so yeah, that's dad. Who gave you this business? Who gave you this business? Well, dad. Who gave you all this land? Dad. Who paid for all your education? Dad. You know, your mother starts and you go, yeah, I really haven't really thought much about that. I'm acting a little like that, you know, forgetful or ungrateful. So you relate to the analogy? It can be like that. Because we became distant from our Janam material father, and maybe even not necessarily offensive, let's say, just became a little distant. We became distant and forgetful, and maybe neglectful. Maybe even the father said something like, okay, I'm giving you this house and property, but I want you to maintain it nicely. He may say that. So then your mother might say, did you forget? You know, your father gave you all these things. He also told you to maintain it nicely, but you haven't been maintaining the fence around the property. You know, some people coming in, taking animals, and you're so busy with your work and other things, you haven't maintained the property borders, like, you know, keeping the fence in good repair. You know, when you have fences. In America, they have a phrase, good fences make good neighbors. You know, you say boundary wall or diwar, it's like a fence. Good fences make good neighbors. So if I have 5 acres and I have no fence and my cows wander in your yard, like that King Riga story in the Bhagavatam, the king gave a cow to some Brahmin and that cow wandered into some other Brahmins. Well, obviously he didn't have any fences. So then your mother will remind you and you'll say, yeah, actually, you're right. I forgot some of the instructions of my father. I neglected those. So then I became Papa Avagya. I neglected or I was disregarded some of the orders of my father. Now I've fallen a little bit bad view of my mother, who is like representing my father's interests. So the same thing, if we don't follow the instructions of the guru, then that's a form of disrespecting the guru. Then by that we become distant from the guru. Then we kind of forget the gifts that the guru gave, and then we kind of slip into being ungrateful, and then maybe even, you know, God forbid, but offensive or speaking bad or whatever. You know, think Maya can make a lot of jadu, magic, you know, hypnosis in our brain. So that's what I just thought that. But I was thinking myself, this just came up in my mind when I was washing my feet, and I just didn't, you know, I just kind of went through real fast. This is a nice topic. And I just immediately went through like this in my mind. I said, what is that one thing that, and that's because that's what I do. I remember the gifts. You can be, if you've gotten 10,000 gifts, how can you forget? How can you not be grateful unless you're an animal? Only an animal has no gratitude. Like a monkey, you feed him like anything, and then you hang your shirt out, and he takes and rips it off the line and eats it. You feed him every day. The same monkey will take your shirt and bite it and rip it all up. There's no great gratitude or appreciation. So that's the animal. So I do this. I think, oh, yeah, Prabhupada. And then, so you think gifts means service, gifts means an expression of love. So now take it to a higher level, to the highest level of the spiritual world. Who's on the receiving end of gifts in the spiritual world? Krishna. And the givers are the gopis in Radha. And they've given him so many gifts, which gift means an expression of love. So they've expressed their love in so many unlimited myriad of ways. And those are the gifts of their heart gems they've given to Krishna, their heart, their pran, their man, their dan. They really, they're the ultimate Krishna samarpan. The gopis, they gave their pran, their dan, their money, their wealth, everything. Even they had to give all their pearls and money to buy back some pearl necklaces from Krishna in the Mukta Charita story when they lost all their pearls. So they're the ideal in this regard. So it's kind of like the father, like say for example, the father might say, I'm going to give you all these gifts, but there's a condition. I want you to I'm going to give you this, you know, house and land and all this money, but just maintain. So that, I'm giving gifts, but then I'm making condition. You, from your side, you have to do something for me. You have to maintain. You have to maintain what I've given you. So that concept of maintaining is like a request or an order to do something. So part of being grateful, Guru's given me all these gifts, you know, peace of mind or direction in life or a new worldview. So many things you can figure out what they all are. And then, you know, there's this whole life of bhakti and showed me how to do that. And then, so you remember those gifts, but then you feel what, you know, I feel gratitude, but I should do something for him. I should do something for him. So that's maintaining what I've given you, the concept that, oh, well, he gave me all these gifts, and he just asked me to get up at 4 o'clock and chant japa until 7, and you know, he asked me to do some things. So then, if that's like when the father says, I'll give you all this stuff, I just have one request, maintain the border. So the guru is saying, I'm giving you all these gifts, I just ask one thing, follow these, you know, body, a few instructions. So then if we're grateful, then we will happily and accept these gifts and appreciate so much the gifts we receive, and then reciprocate by maintaining his order or carrying out his order. This is the meaning of gratitude. That's what Prabhupada said. There's a lot of people that are encouraged, want to in charge of distributing Prabhupada's books. They'll say, if you want to please Prabhupada, distribute his books. And that's no doubt true. But in terms of percentage, let's take an example. Prabhupada was on the planet. I was in Los Angeles. It was the largest temple in the world of ISKCON. Most devotees were there in Los Angeles, more than a New Vrindavan community at that time. There was about 500 devotees there because Fate Museum was there and Spanish BBT was there, which is a huge BBT. All the layout, everything department, all the Spanish was all laid out, everything done there and distributed, of course, in California to Spanish people, but mostly South America, that like that. And English BBT, so it was big. And there were 500 devotees, and there were 35 devotees that were distributing Prabhupada's books. 15 men or 15, 16 ladies. So that means the other 465 weren't pleasing Prabhupada. Obviously, so in any given sample, it was a great minority that were actively involved in distributing books to please Prabhupada. But it means that also that by innumerable other services, including child raising, educating, etc., maintaining wife and working, etc., was also pleasing Prabhupada. But the one point you made, which Prabhupada made for everyone, he said, what I want for all my disciples, they become pure devotees of the Lord, pure lovers of Krishna. Krishna prema pumartha mahan. This is the pumartha, this is the desirable object to attain in human life, sartak, jeev sartak. The art of the living entity is this, to it. And that's what Guru wants. Guru wants everyone to be a pure devotee of the Lord. What did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? By two qualities, by his sundarya rupam and by his prem, prabhav. He was just oozing and distributing praying with his glance and with his chanting, with his touch, with his intention, with his words. And his form was so beautiful, people fell in love with him just by seeing him. Like people see some beautiful man or woman, they fall in love because of the external beauty. Quote-unquote falling in love. I know it's Maya, but, oh, she's so beautiful. And you say, what do you think about her? Oh, I love her. whatever that means. There's some intense attraction and magnetic connection due to that attraction of that beauty. So imagine Mahaprabhu, Radha and Krishna combined, people saw him and fell in love, quote unquote. Fell in love means that Krishna's Kaviraj received praying that way. So that was the mission of Lord Chaitanya, as everyone knows so well. Namo Maha Varanaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gorcha Sainamaha. So the mission of Guru is not less than that. The mission of Guru is the mission of Gaur. Guru and Gaur, Guru Gauranga. Shri Shri Guru Gauranga Jayate. All glories, all victory to the mission of Lord Chaitanya and to the mission of Guru, which is the mission of Krishna. Love me. Man manabhava mad bhakto yaji mam namaskaru. Love me. This is the 4-point program of Krishna consciousness. Love Krishna in 4 different ways. Prabhupada said this verse from the 18th chapter. Become a Priya Sakhi of Krishna. Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru mami vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. So in this intensity of love, which is described here as the culmination of all the love described in the Gita, it far surpasses the love of Priya Sakha. He says, Saketi, O Saketi, Arjuna is a Sakha, he's a Priya. He's definitely Pratijane. He's a Priyajana. He's a Priyajana. He's a Vishnujana. A Priyajana, Vishnujana of Krishna and Dwarka and Hastinapur, like this Vaikuntha mood. So this is Arjuna. But this verse, at the end, Krishna's remembering the gopis again. Manmana, they always think of me. Become manmana, manmana bhakta, become my bhakta, and worship me. The gopis worship Krishna. There's no greater worship. The dasya bhaktas are worshiping Krishna to a certain extent of their existence. And a sakya bhakta, he's worshiping Krishna to a certain extent of his existence. And the mother and motherhood, or vatsalya, they're worshiping Krishna to a certain extent. But there's some limit. But there's, it's prem, no limit means sima. Sima means no limit.
Yes.
So prema sima is the gopis in Madhur Bhav. They're worshiping Krishna to the unlimited zenith of degree. Because they offered everything they had, including their physical bodies. I mean, transcend metaphysical bodies. So when it says, become my devotee, worship me, worship means to the highest extent. And no one can worship Krishna more to a higher extent than Radharani, Aradhanam. She's Govinda Sarvasva, and she's the greatest of Krishna's worshippers. And they're offering obeisances, you know, all every time, every particle of dust that touches Krishna's feet, they worship it. They hold Krishna's feet on their breasts and they carry the dust of Krishna's feet on their heads. And they're so much worshippers of Krishna, the Brajagopis, that they have they've given everything. They're so devoted, they have absolutely no fear. But other devotees, in all the other rasas, they have fear. They have some fear in the relationship with Krishna. The devotees in Vatsalya, you see that when Krishna had a headache in Dwarka, yes, and Narada Muni went there and said, I need the dust of the feet. So they went to Narada Muni went to his devotees in Vatsalya Ras. Rohini was there, Vasudeva was there, Devaki was there. No, we can't do that, we'll go to hell. And he went to the queens. Oh, we can't do that, we'll go to hell. They went to Arjuna and the Pandavas, and the Sakas, they're in Sakha, and they went to hell. Then he came to Vrindavan. Everybody said, no, it's not possible. So everyone, the mothers and the friends and everyone in Vrindavan. Then he went to the gopis. They said, take everything. So this is the extent of the fearlessness and their love. They're not afraid of anything. So bhakti, the ultimate bhakti is found in the gopis. So this verse from Gita is talking about Radharani and the gopis. Manmanava manbhakto. So this love, this type of love, is what Lord Chaitanya came to distribute. Krishna Prema Pradayate. And so he distributed through his followers, the Pancharatrika Bhagavat Parampara, and whatever, maybe Diksha Paramparas have been set up also. But they're all distributing this love of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya didn't initiate anyone. But how he distributed? He distributed by his wish, his intention. And people picked it up and distributed on down the line. So the guru is distributing that love. So this is the proper thing. If one remembers the gifts that he's given by guru, and he tries to execute the main order, the mukhya agya, the mukhya guru agya, the main or agya pradhan, you can say the chief order of the guru is to love thy Lord with all thy thoughts, words, and deeds. There was a great guru named Jesus. We were born and raised in this Catholic tradition, and he preached love of God, the Father. He said, love the Lord thy Father. Love, O my brothers. He called everyone, O my brothers, O my brethren. That is Old English. O my brethren, O brethren, O my brothers. Love the Lord thy Father with all thy with all thy thoughts, words, and deeds. That's Old English. With all the T-H-E-E, with all. In other words, modernize it. We should love God with all of our thoughts, words, and deeds. Actions. So this is the message of every spiritual master. And if someone is taking that itself as the main service, that's what you made that nice point. That someone may be living in Finland and be initiated and be very, very close to the guru. Very, very close. Like Prabhupada used the analogy, is the fly sitting on the throne of the king, is he close to the king? Is a fly sitting on the nose of the guru? Is he close to the guru? No. Another nice point I came to mind is that because guru gives orders, and not to say orders, it sounds like army, but he gives some krama of sadhana, some steps of sadhana to elevate our consciousness and to improve our lives. So it's not the order of the boss or the employer. It's actually helpful, friendly advice in the form of shiksha and guidance. And if one follows those step-by-step suggestions, then he'll make significant spiritual progress, which will benefit him. You will be the beneficiary of your own endeavors. If your endeavors, the interest and capital, the interest is not going to go to the guru, it's going to go to you. If I give you 5 tips how to make money in the stock market, and then you go and employ those, use those, it's your money, it's your profit. But if you don't, then it's not my loss. I don't lose anything. And then, so if you're smart, you say, well, he gave me some good tips, I should follow them and see what happens, and judge a thing by his results. So then you do, and then you get the result. So then when you do follow the instructions of a guru, you will get result, definitely. And then that result will bring you closer to the guru, and it'll increase your gratitude. Because when you're getting more gifts. Because as you remember the gifts, when you follow the orders of the guru, or the system of suggestions, it's sadhana, basically he's teaching about rules for sadhana. When you follow them, you experience reciprocation. And then that, when you get that reciprocation, that comes in the form of gifts. You feel happier or more inspired and more understanding, and just feel kind of a solid feeling of buoyancy in your heart. And then again, you think, oh, this is very nice. It's a good idea to follow this. It works. The process, as they say, works. And then increases your gratitude. And that becomes another gift that actually, well, he gave me these 10 instructions and I followed 4 and it was pretty good. And that was, these 4 instructions became 4 more gifts he gave me because they benefited me. A gift is something that benefits you. I give you a new sweater and you wear it and you feel, oh, this is nice. It's nice and warm. I'm getting benefit now. It's cold season. So now, there are 6 more instructions. I wonder what more benefits and gifts I will receive if I follow those. There's several verses when they describe the mantra in relation to the Diksha mantra. It's in Bhakti Sandarbha, Majiva Goswami, and other places. He's saying that one should see the guru in the mantra and the mantra in the guru. In this case, when they're speaking about the mantra, they mean Gopal mantra or the Diksha, Pancharatri Diksha mantras. Gopal Mantra or Kam Gayatri or Guru Mantra. But it also makes sense, you know, mantra, because the Hare Krishna mantra, it's not considered, say, a Diksha mantra, because it doesn't require Diksha, like these other mantras, formal initiation, let's say. But the rule could be applied there also, because at the beginning, middle, and end of any service, we have to always remember Guru. Just like it says, when you're doing puja, if you're not chanting along with the puja and doing some nam sankirtan, then the puja is not accepted. Jiva Goswami says this. But even before you start your puja, there's another rule that says if you don't worship your guru first, then your puja is bekar. It's useless. It's not accepted by Krishna. So guru puja is primary. It's the beginning. And then, so that when we're chanting the Maha Mantra, that is worshipping the order of the guru. So that's a type of worship. The chanting, this we call nam yagya. It's a type of yagya worship. So you also have to remember the guru before you chant. You offer pranams to the guru. And then after, when you finish, you offer pranams and beg guru, please give me the mercy and I can chant this holy name with attention, without offenses, and understand the meanings and get some revelations. Then when you're chanting, as you remember the guru, then you get strength to chant. And then another point that I want to mention about this, you have faith and there's so many orders. To follow those, like the guru gave 10 rules, and then, like say 10 rules. And so I have faith in these rules and I'm trying to follow some of them, and I have received benefit, and that benefit I take it as another gift of guru. But now I'm having a little difficulty with the other ones, whatever they may be. So now if I remember guru, and I pray the Guru for strength, by remembering him, and he'll give me strength, that I can also follow those other orders. Because we can remember, well, my Guru said, get up at 4 o'clock. And so we remember Guru, and we think, well, my Guru's up at 4 o'clock, because I'm up. And if he's up, then why can't I get up? And when I think about getting up, like sometimes I don't set my clock, so I just wake up 2 o'clock or 2:15 or whatever. Never after 4, because I'm taking rest pretty okay by 10 maximum. So some, a lot of times I wake up at 2, and I think, oh, it's not 4. But then I think, well, my Guru Maharaj got up at what? I remember my Guru Maharaj, that his example of his life was getting up at 1, Srila Prabhupada. I said, well, at least I can get up at 2, 2:30. I get up at 2:30 and chant and then do some writing, whatever. So by remembering, because a guru is not telling you to do anything he's not doing. Or he's not instructing you in something that he hasn't done, or what, like say he's instructing you in deity worship, which he may not be doing at that point, but or even instructing you in things he's never done, but he's knows how to do, whatever. Someone may have read about cooking, a guru may have read about cooking and even have some intuition about it, and you can ask him a question, he can instruct you how to cook something for the Lord, although he never did it. But generally it's like I get strength in all the orders and the program that Prabhupada gave me by remembering Prabhupada. What a better example. So that remembrance of the guru, and that keeps us close, and then we maintain our gratitude. Because we're talking about this maintaining a gratitude level, maintaining a gratitude percentile, or a gratitude level of the disciple towards the guru. And one way, and what Kaveri was mentioning, is that we can actually maintain the gratitude level and actually increase it, not only in a occasional way, by an occasional remembrance of the gifts, but by moment to moment thinking how to please or serve the guru. Is the guru pleased with what I'm doing? And that itself, by remembering the guru, is a way of moment to moment showing gratitude, instead of an occasional, well, yeah, because sometimes we get wrapped up in our own lives and our own services and whatever we're doing, and maybe we kind of seem a little distant and forgetful of guru. Then sometimes we sit down and say, wait a minute. Because Maya can make us think that we're the doer, that actually I got all this on my own, and I'm pretty smart, and gee, I know so much. Look, like you ride a bicycle and take your hands off the handlebars. Look, Mom, no hands, you know. I'm riding a bicycle by myself. We think the idea, the tendency, the self-deception is very prominent in the conditioned soul. So then we think, actually, I'm a self-made man. You know, I'm pretty smart. You know, and I'm Mahanidhi Swami. And wow, you know. You know, you get delusion, you get forgetful. Maya covers. Maya, you think that, oh, I surrender to Guru, I'm initiated. Maya's not going to cover me now. Maya is, you know, she has this bag over your head. Any second, you just pull it over your whole head and tie up on the bottom. And you go like you can't get out, you know, like a solid, you know, canvas bag or something. So we can tend to think like that. Yeah, pretty smart. People say, yeah, good lecture. You know, yeah, you're smart. Yeah, I'm smart. And then we forget. But then when comes that occasion, you're on that spin for months or years or whatever, kind of distant from Guru to some extent, thinking you're the doer. Then all of a sudden you sit down and say, wait a minute. Nothing. You know, what was I before? What all these things that I have, whatever position I have, any name, fame, position, recognition, ability, knowledge, talent, anything I have in my hand to do with Krishna has been given to me by Prabhupada. The idea of Krishna, the name of Krishna, the deity of Krishna, especially for us, because you all are Indian people, pious religious people, you've seen murtis of Krishna. Prabhupada gave me the form of Krishna. I never knew the form of God. You know, you're a different. So our gratitude for our guru is very, very deep. Taught us so many things, like from A to Z. I mean, without going into the hygiene aspects of things, which you can kind of calculate. It taught us everything from how to eat with our hands to, you know, other things. Hygiene and scraping the tongue, and mustard oil on the gates before bath, and passing, and all these things. And as for us, it's like it's easy for us if we took Prabhupada out, there would be zero. There's no Krishnamurti. There's no Krishna Maha Mantra, because you've heard the Maha Mantra before you ever heard of your guru or anything. You've seen deities, and your great grandmother had deities, or your mother. You know, your mother is like your surrounded. But we came out of this dreamland of, you know, Maya Nagari into some kind of fairy tale spiritual world, a form of God. I mean, I came from a Roman Catholic background, so at least in the Catholic Church we have murtis of Jesus and we have prasad, many things like Hinduism, but Lutheran, Baptist, Protestant, all these, there's all they have is a cross, so there's no murtis, they're really impersonal. The most personal icon-oriented Christian religion is the original Christianity, which is a Catholic, Roman Catholic, Catholic. The word Catholic in English means the Orthodox, or the original. True form as a Catholic, so they have holy water, you know, it's like Jamuna Jal and the whole thing. So it's very much almost very parallel. But I had some idea that God has a form and this stuff. But I said, God, Prabhupada. That's why it makes me humble, because I realize I was zero and nothing without Prabhupada. So when people pay obeisances or try to make some worshiper, I say, look, you know, you got the wrong one, you know. I'm nothing. I don't deserve anything. I don't deserve anything. I don't even deserve to be in amongst devotees or anything. It's all borrowed plumes, and it's all my father's wealth. You know, like, say, wow, you're really generous, Maharaj. Yeah, I have my father's credit card. You know, I keep going down to the bank and taking out money from my debit card. God, you know, Maharaj is really nice. He's treating everybody. He's giving them clothes. Yeah, I'm nice. Yeah. And then everyone says, who's that? You know, who's paying that debit card bill? That's his father. So, Prabhupada, you know, the debit card says Srila Prabhupada debit card, titanium card, Srila Prabhupada, you know, credit line, $50 million. And so I, you know, whatever I have, I'm buying with his credit card. Name, fame, whatever I have, it's his. So that's why, you know, when this, now this Vyasa Puja yearly function is coming on, I said, look, I don't even want, this is like a, this is a worst day, this is terrible, I don't want any kind of thing. And America, I remember Guru Kripa Maharaj, he's my godbrother, he's from San Francisco, he was a nice person, nice devotee, but he's quite frank in his speech. And he said, sometimes he said, someone said, he says, Prabhu, you think you're something? You ain't nothing. He speaks to them like this, you know. He says, Prabhu, you think you're something? You ain't nothing. And when he says it, it's so much power. It's like atom bomb in that, those words. It's like, feel like totally devastated. And you realize, actually, I'm 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. He just really made me realize the infinitude of my potential here. And my power is like insignificant to 1,000th to the 10,000th degree, insignificant. 1,000th and then 10,000 zeros above it degree to, you know, to nothing. But it's, we really, as the age-old expression is, you can't judge a book by its cover. Can I see, if we're tree kalagya, then it would be little difficult to exist in this world. Some people are like that, very few. And if they are like that, they're extremely grave. Because they see the future, ooh, this person's going there, and I can't do anything to stop him. You know, if the future of someone is, you see someone, he's going to, you literally know he's going to be a dog. We can philosophically know the person's living like this and like that, he'll be a dog or a pig or whatever. And that's horrifying to consider philosophically the person's future due to his sinful deeds. And we'll try to preach and save them and show our compassion. But if you can actually see, and if we can't, I often make this point, if you're not Trikalagyan, Trikalagya, you're not aware of the three phases of time of anyone you're looking at, and how can you pass judgment? You don't know the past of the person, you don't know the future, you're seeing a spot of eternity. You're when you look at a person, you're seeing a spot of eternity called the present moment. When you look at a person, you're seeing a spot of eternity known as the present moment. He's eternal. And where will he be tomorrow? And if you're looking grihastha, kid, baby, girl, woman, man, then you're nowhere. You're not even looking in one direction with the speak of three. You're not even seeing reality in the present moment with the speak of the past and the future. Trikalagya means seeing reality, the present reality, the past reality, and the future reality. This is Trikalagya. Agyan, to know the three phases of time. Because if you're seeing the cover and measuring and judging and calculating by the cover of someone, then you're not seeing. You're not seeing at all. You're just, you know, reflecting the images of the material world, which is Maya compression of reality. That's why, you know, that's why love everyone, respect is. And actually respecting others creates such a wonderful feeling of clarity in the heart. Actually, pride and false ego hardens the heart and coats it with some black tar as a coating. When you're actually humble in front of people and before people and devotees, everyone, then the heart, you feel very clear-hearted. You feel very clear-hearted. And open with everyone. Surrounded by friends, the only enemy is the enemy within. Friends in all direction and one enemy within. But usually we think, my enemy is, I'm a friend, you're my enemy. You know, you're my enemy. I'm my friend. I'm my friend. My mind is my friend. You're my enemy. Us and them. Us and them. Us means Atman mind. Atman mind, that's us. And then there's them. this diamond gem of philosophical point, which is so crucial and essential to our spiritual existence, as a dynamic flow of feelings between guru and disciple. Sajatiya Snigda. This is told in Nectar Devotion, that this association with Sajati, there's many meanings of that, but Snigda, I think, is the Sajati sometimes is not clear to even define. But we have in our, that's why there's sometimes some questions about associating with sadhus, but that there's different levels of the meaning of Sajati. Sajati, like if I want to be love Radharani and serve Radharani, it's also Sajati, it's my jati to be with someone who loves Radharani. But then a fine point, well, if you're even aware that this is my stai rati, or this is my viewpoint of things, and say, like, Nimbarki is Sukhi Bhav, and we're Sukhi Bhav, but it's there in the Nayaka Sukhi, and we're in the Pran Sukhi or Nitya Sukhi, you know, of the Mandri. So it's slightly different. Nayakas, Sakis are also serving Radharani. It's like a very fine point. So strictly speaking, for the Sajati, it would mean you, if you're Gaudiya, then you associate with Gaudiyas. But the odd point is, in some sadhus, they don't have any particular sampradaya. So they're kind of like all colors in one. So they're like, this particular sadhu speaks all on so much on the Gaudiya scriptures and the Gaudiya Siddhanta, so, and he doesn't like to be limited by any one viewpoint. And so that it's some sadhus, it's a little hard to pinpoint exactly. So they're kind of like, that's why, and they're very interesting, because you see, I know one sadhu, he gives lectures, and there are sadhus from many sampradayas there. And but they're all, and no one's feeling that, they're all feeling that they're getting something from this sadhu speaking, that's sajati, that's conduce anukulya for their angle of loving Krishna and serving Krishna. There's Ramanandis there, there's Gaudiyas there, there's just Brijbasis there, and so many Nibark, so many people there, Ram Bhaktas or whatever. So that would be a type of, but the biggest point here is Snigdha, affection. Is that the affection heart, if no matter who a Vaishnava is, if he has Krishna in his heart, or Radha in his heart, and he's affectionate and caring, then he's going to give Radha in your heart and let her do what she does, or Krishna come in your heart. So that's, I think, of the two, because it's not always easy to understand, especially in Braj, because sadhus are very, you know, esoteric and very deep, and you know, there's siddhas and all kinds of saints. Otherwise, you go outside of the holy dhams and everything. This is a Ramanandi temple. So if you go in there, it's going to be all Ramanandi sadhus and teaching the Ramanandi conception of worshipping Sita Ram as a branch of Sri Vaishnavism. Sri Vaishnavas worship Lakshmi Narayan, you know, Ramanuja. But this is a branch of that sampradaya. It's just like you could say the Gaudiyas are a branch of the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya, because we're not that much eye to eye with the Madhvas. You know, the philosophical conceptions, the goal, and many things, practices. But we're Brahma Madhva Gaudiya. So now, talk about Sajati. What is our Sajati? We're the Brahma Sampradaya, or we're the Madhva Sampradaya, or the Gaudiya Sampradaya? Well, in the terms of Bhakti Ratnakara and Narahari Chakravarti Thakur, he says, and he was a little bit just after Lord Chaitanya Bhakti Ratnakara, and he said that when Bengali Vaishnavas would see the followers of Gauranga coming down the street, they say, oh, here comes the followers of the Nimai Sampradaya. The Nimai Sampradaya. Because in essence, we're uniquely followers of the Nimai Sampradaya. Pata pumbir dvija shreshta varnashrama vibhagasha svanushti tasya dharmasya samsadhir haritoshanam. It's concluded, the highest perfection you can achieve by discharging duties prescribed by your occupation or your caste and your ashram and your varna is to please the personality of Godhead. Sam siddhir hari toshnam. So the pleasure and satisfaction of Hari, that is the complete perfection. So one point you said about pleasing Guru, and that is the essence, a simple conclusion. What I realize, what I'm thinking is that we go here and there and hear from so many gurus in so many lifetimes until we can finally find that guru that we can, whoever that is, everyone has to find or whatever, find that person that we can fully surrender to and to such an extent that we can dedicate our life to try to please him. And that's the conclusion of all the bhakti, the line of bhakti. It's personal. It's, bhakti is about love, persons, the Supreme Person, and all the persons connected to the Supreme Person, which means Guru and Vaishnava. Hari Guru, Hari Toshnam, Guru Toshnam, and Vaishnava Toshnam. That is the simple essence of Krishna consciousness, is to please a Guru. But I feel there's two things here. You have to find a Guru that generates that kind of faith in you that you can actually focus your whole life on trying to please him. And that, and even maybe if you may have, and but you haven't realized that, that's one point. Because I just traced back my beginning myself. I was hearing from other gurus. They weren't representatives of bhakti, and I wasn't sure it was bhakti that I was even looking for exactly. I was looking for guru and looking for perfection and realizing God, and I wanted to see God and had the idea that he's a person. And I thought maybe that my conception, my idea that God's a person as I was raised with, maybe I could fulfill my ambition and desire through other paths of yoga. I was pursuing different gurus. But I didn't meet any of them that their vibration of their speech didn't ring true with my heart of hearts, and nor did I feel inspired that I could surrender to that person or to serve them, him. Because all gurus would preach that concept, you have to serve guru. That's there. Raj Yoga or whatever, Hatha Yoga, or some seva. So in hearing from guru and meeting his disciples, that was the primary way, and I've seen a few times, 20, 30 times. Lectures, it wasn't very intimate, obviously, but the vibration and the presence and everything I heard, the persona and the aura and what I met of his prabha, of his disciples, convinced me and touched my heart. So here we are today. This is it. We just simply have to please Krishna. Please Guru and please Krishna. It's simple. There's nothing to learn, nothing more to learn. Just act. If you come to the point of, if you know this principle and you really know it and realize it, you may have to go here and there and spend many lifetimes and hear from so many. When you find, you know, whoever that one is, and you just realize that, then perfection is around the corner. Because Guru Toshnam, Hari Toshnam is a complete perfection. Well, so is, that's why I thought of this verse, Sam Siddhir Hari Toshnam, Sam Siddhir Guru Toshnam, that the complete perfection lies in the in executing the principle of satisfying the Guru, pleasing the Guru. Radham Sravesham. That verse is Shiva speaks about to Parvati, what's the highest form of worship? And he said, well, you know, Vishnu was higher, worshipping Vishnu was higher than worshipping Shiva. That's basically what he said. And then he says, higher than the worship of Vishnu, Lord Shiva said, is the devotees, the that which is connected to Vishnu, Tadiyanam Samarchanam, Tadiya. Generally what they say is that it's, if one, he always, because we have, just like for example, someone, Prabhupada was here for 2 years for some of us, and 1 year or 3 years, and so then in the 30 years of Prabhupada's absence, maybe people are obviously hearing, you know, his disciples are hearing from different Shiksha gurus. And the general idea is that they're seeing, they maintain their fidelity to Prabhupada and their connection with Prabhupada by seeing Prabhupada in them. And this concept of guru is one, but actually seeing them as the representative of their own guru. And they don't think, they don't measure one to the other, or they don't say this is big or small, or they just think this is a representative of Prabhupada, another wave of Prabhupada's mercy. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But the point is that, say for example, if someone, if the guru doesn't have, because gurus may have thousands of disciples, and he doesn't have any particular service for all those, you know, individual service for those thousands of disciples, so they're just engaging, however they're engaging, in their bhakti, under maybe serving someone or serving their families or whatever they're doing, their seva, whatever, wherever they are. But now, if the diksha, I would say when it comes to seva, especially in the living presence of the guru, if the guru asks to do seva, then I would believe that the seva, the diksha guru, takes precedence over the seva of the shiksha guru. This is the distinction I want to make. You say it's all one, whatever you're saying. Because without the diksha guru, there would never be a shiksha guru. Yes. So that gratitude, there's gratitude, appreciation, and faith, and wanting to serve. All these things are there with so many additional gurus. But you can never forget the original. So the original has this, and the diksha guru has a specific, significant position in the life of the disciple. Now, I'm not so sure. You cite the example of Yadunandan and Narottam, and there's others that we don't see much. I don't know exactly what kind of initiation Yadunandan gave, whether it was Brahman, you know, gave him. I guess he gave him Pancharchika initiation because he's a Kayast, you know, Raghunath Das. And Yadunandan Acharya is a Brahman, so he gave him Pancharchika Diksha. And he's a Gaudiya also. And so we don't know what service he did. I mean, the guru, I mean, we don't know how many years, there's not much really clear when he was initiated or how many years he was, because he was Grihastha, I think, so Raghunath Das. So he may be initiated for many years serving his guru in whatever capacity, giving donations or whatever Grihasthas can do. And then the guru, understanding the need of that disciple also, he arranged for him to get free from his bondage. Because he tried independently, Raghunath Das, to go to Lord Chaitanya, and he couldn't go. And then he had to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Well, he couldn't get the mercy of Lord Nityananda without the mercy of his guru. So Yadunandan Acharya is his guru, so he arranged for him by some excuse, do some deity puja. Yes. My pujari is not well, can you do the puja? Yes. And then that gave facility for him, opened a way for Raghunath to slip away from the guards of his father and run off to Panihati or wherever and serve Lord Nityananda, and eventually attain Lord Chaitanya's sangha and blessings and shiksha of some degree, and then the shelter and shiksha and service of Srupa Damodara Goswami. And then he went on to, so he had several gurus to bring him to perfection, at least in his example. Yes. And he was certainly, he was clear in his relationship with all of them. But as far as service, I mean, there wasn't much personal service he really rendered to any of them, other than following their teachings and doing bhajan and worshipping Radha and Krishna according to their instructions. He was a bhajanandi. Mm-hmm. Gosyanandi so much that he was, these gurus, the shiksha gurus, they were also doing bhajan and writing books. Mm-hmm. Jiva Goswami was doing personal service. Yes. Because he was the nephew. Mm-hmm. Also, he was a nephew of Rupa Goswami. Yes. He's Anupam's brother. Rupa Goswami's brother is Anupam, and his son is Jiva Goswami. So he washed his feet and prepared the manuscripts and all these things. I think there's no problem, because if you're
pleasing the Shiksha Guru, you're pleasing the Diksha Guru. And that the Diksha Guru, he should, I would say, it's like the father, the significance of the father in relation to the uncles. The father is pretty significant, because without the father you don't exist. So I can never, you know, that's eternally indebted to my Diksha Guru. Because there's one thing, is that someone may be adding fruits to your tree, you could say, but who gave you the roots and the trunk and the branches? So we tend to think that the fruits are more valuable. I'm getting such tasty fruits from this tree, so I value the fruits. I want to be with the fruits more. I want to serve the fruits more. And anyway, the tree is there. If the tree is removed, there's no more fruits. No matter how many, you know, someone goes and hangs a fruit, you know, the fruit will only develop if it's connected to a tree. So no matter how many fruits you collect by sadhu sangha, unless they're connected to the tree of Diksha Guru, they won't get ripe. They won't develop. That's why you'll see many, I can't offhand recite this particular verses, but there are many verses that do establish the difference, which I mentioned to you to inquire about this from your Shiksha Guru. There are many shlokas which I've read and I've seen in my studies. I didn't pay much attention to it because I never really identified much with this idea of this particular service of being Guru. But there are many verses which emphasize the specific, different and unique position of the Diksha Guru. And you should become familiar with those. Yes. And that will help your understanding. Yes. And because the tendency is that if you're getting so many fruits that you can forget the tree. Yes. And then you can relativize the branches in the tree and relativize the Guru, thinking, oh, he's not so big. And then you lose the concept that they're one, that actually all of this that I'm getting from Shiksha Guru is also there in Diksha Guru, but it's manifesting through Shiksha Guru. If we think that Diksha Guru doesn't know anything, or he doesn't know this much, or he knows more, this type of thinking I don't think is correct. That's why all of us, Prabhupada's disciples, if we're receiving Shiksha from some Shiksha Guru, we are feeling and seeing that this is Prabhupada, this is coming from Prabhupada is speaking through, because of course he wasn't here. We were seeing that oneness you're mentioning of, not that, oh, this is so and so and this is so and so. They were seeing that Prabhupada is speaking through this person. Well, I tell you my personal life story. I would hear from so many Shiksha Gurus and I would accept their teachings and add them to my life and improve my life. But I never felt that I had to surrender to those Shiksha Gurus. I always drew a line. Yes. I didn't feel I had to surrender those Shiksha Gurus, nor did I have to do any personal service or become like their surrendered disciples, because I already surrendered my heart and life to be the servant. You know, the servant of all, you know, if someone says, who's your master? Oh, everyone's my master. So Prabhupada said, a servant of all is a servant of none. So it's like you're saying, well, my Diksha Guru isn't really good enough. He's not worth serving, but I found someone that's worth serving. It almost sounds like what you're saying. What I'm trying to say is, according to Shastra, there's no need to serve the Shiksha Guru. Serving has many meanings. One meaning is that to serve the Shiksha Guru means to learn, accept his teachings and try to follow them. That's the type of service. But as far as actually, you know, my life and soul is my Diksha Guru. And if he's there, it's like Yadunandan, you know, he said you go there. You know, if the Diksha Guru is there and there's services, I think the Diksha Guru should be served. He should be served first. Yes. And then, but it's not that. I had many Shiksha Gurus, but I would give donations, or But I didn't surrender. I'm Dasan, Dasan, Dasa, my Shiksha Guru. Because I accept the Prabhu my heart, and there's no other guru in my heart. Although I've had good relationships and very close relationships with many Shiksha Gurus, but I didn't put Prabhupada out of my heart and put them in my heart at any time. I couldn't do it because Prabhupada gave me everything. Because it's not window shopping per se, but I'm here and if you want some help, I'm busy, I'm doing my Guru Seva, but okay, I have some time. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I usually preach, you have to find someone, you have faith, you have to find one. The concept of many Shiksha Gurus, I think you're getting confused. That's why you should try to find these verses to establish the position of the Shiksha Guru. The concept of Shiksha Gurus, it's like, who's your boss? Everyone's my boss. One guy has to give you the paycheck. You have to work for one person. So it's like the Shiksha Gurus, as far as I understand, what I can remember, the Shiksha Gurus are supposed to amplify the instructions of the Diksha Guru. They're supposed to clarify them, improve them, and they're supposed to increase the relationship with the Diksha Guru. Not that it supplants it. The Shiksha Guru supplants the Diksha Guru and puts him out of the picture and takes over the picture and becomes, yeah, and then his picture's on the altar and he's your everything and he's my Diksha Guru. I don't know about him anymore. Prabhupada's on my altar and that's that. He's on my heart altar and on my external altar. And it's not like, this year I'm getting a lot from this guru, so his picture's on me. Then 5 years later, some other guru comes and I go to that guru. Because when you meet a guru, you're supposed to give your life and soul to him, like Amaya was saying. So you didn't do it. So now you found another guru. Now you're saying, I have another guru, I give my life and soul there. Well, maybe 5 years you'll find another guru and give your life and soul there. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but the idea of that different Shiksha Gurus became prominent in someone's life, that's, we can see that on one level in our parampara. And that's okay. And I don't have any problem with that. But then at the same time, how you said, even at the end, he's always remembering Yadunandan. And so, that we have to understand all that, but I can speak on my own because I've done that. My Guru Maharaj hasn't been here since so many years. He's not manifest presence. 1977. That's 36 years. So I've had many Shiksha, teachers, but it's Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada.
Yes.
To me, it's like, where's the chastity? Okay, Guru gave everything, and he's the root and everything. Okay, but now everything's my Shiksha Guru. It's like, it doesn't seem quite correct. But because that means that what it means for me is that you couldn't give everything to the Diksha Guru. So because that's actually what it means. You give everything. I probably said, was I successful? I had complete faith in the Guru and the Hare Krishna mantra. That was my success. So we heard that from our Guru, and I'm trying to follow that line. That's why I went off when you heard me preach. I said, find some Guru you can fully believe in. Find a path that you believe in. This path I believe in, it makes sense to me. It'll take me to the spiritual dimension. However I understand the spiritual dimension. God is Krishna, Ram, whatever, Brahman. And then find a teacher on that path, who's living that path and realizing that path. And then surrender to him and then depend on Krishna. Don't be the doer, just surrender. I mean, I had Shiksha Gurus that externally look like, wow, they know so much more than Prabhupada and they're speaking so much depth. And okay, that can be there. But can I measure the depth of a devotee? Can I measure the depth of bhakti? Because like we have that question, can you measure the depth of love? Can you weigh love? Can you measure love? Oh, I love you this much. So bhakti is different. So you look at someone, you can measure it. Because the essential thing is bhakti, devotion. And so if I was to use that as a standard, then I've been with, externally you can say Prabhupada seems like his books are somewhat simple and, you know, basic. Oh, we read the Prabhupada's books. Oh, I've got it down now. I think I understand it, although they're so deep also. And then I want more. I need more, and juice and nectar, whatever you may, these words you may use, or we use, or anybody will use. And then we find it. And Krishna rages because he fulfilled, he's merciful. But that doesn't mean, you know, I said, okay, hey, they're presenting this aspect, and Prabhupada's presenting this to me through them. But the idea of throwing myself at their feet and dasosmi, and here's all my money and my life, I'm your servant. No way. You know, I was dying, drowning in the ocean. I would be dead. Prabhupada saved me. So that, I don't know how many Shiksha Gurus, they can be like, you know, PhDs in philosophy, and they know everything inside and out. But when I was, at the time when I was drowning, and I was going to die, Prabhupada came and saved me. You saved my life. This is the concept. And that's how I believe. My life was destined for, you know, extinction for millions of years and sinful, you know, punished hells. And because, you know, we're fallen. You people are very religious and pious and whatnot. But we feel that we were like, I don't know, I feel like Prabhupada did everything for me. Unless you feel like that for your guru, you really can't surrender. That's why you're not unsatisfied and you shop around. It's not, you know, like now, like I know many God brothers of Prabhupada, they never went to any Shiksha gurus. They said, I got Prabhupada. That's all I need. And they're going strong today. They never took any Shiksha, just rowing the boat, you know. I don't know anything. I just row my boat and say, Govinda Jaya Jaya, Govinda Jaya Jaya, Govinda Jaya. I just read this Bhagavad Gita. My guru said, read this thing, I don't know. And then Lord Chaitanya came and embraced him. So it's, if you know, the Savior, they say, oh, Jesus, the Savior. And then the guru is the Savior. He saved me. So we say he saved me, and then, oh yeah, he saved me. Oh yeah, it was nice, but now I got this other thing. It's like I got another mother or something. Yeah, she was my mother, but I got this other mother now. So it's my personal thing. When I meet God brothers that never went to anyone for shiksha, I have a lot of regard for them. They read Prabhupada's books. And even I asked them, I said, you ever read this? I don't know. I just read Prabhupada's books. They only read, of course, just Prabhupada's books is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is not Prabhupada's books. It's Vyasudeva and Sukadeva and all the Acharyas. And I just read Prabhupada's books. Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is, you know, an ocean of unlimited gems that we can never understand in a thousand lifetimes. And if you just read, I know one devotee has read the Chaitanya Charitamrita about 50 times. And he carries it with him in a bag, the one volume, that he's a sannyasi. And it's so, you know, it's a big, heavy thing. And I was walking once across the temple in the courtyard by Kadia Land of Vrindavan. I said, Maharaj, is that? I said, and we were discussing, yeah, there's a verse. And he pulls out the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's all had little red little papers sticking out of the side, like verses, you know, red papers and blue papers, like page marker type thing, tabs. And it was so, like, you know, the old book that's been read 100 times, it's all, the pages are full of finger oil and stuff. And I said, wow, I mean, you carry this? Yeah, I carry this with me everywhere. It's like a few kilos book, one volume Bengali English Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, that big one. He said, yeah, this is my Bible. I said, this is the Bible. You know, I'm 62, I'm still 37 years later distributing Prabhupada's books by your the smart box arrangement where I have Prabhupada's books, and we have 3 shelves, and one's Prabhupada and 2 are mine. So, but I'm open. You have to find, what I understand is, if I'm not the one, I don't have any problem with that. But you have to find someone that you see as guru, as a representative of pure bhakti, and you can surrender your life there and serve them with your heart and soul, openly, clearly, with your heart and soul. I've done it. I'm doing it. I found someone I'm not saying that I'm that one, but you must find one like that. And if anybody thinks I'm that one, and they surrender like that, and serve me, and then Krishna will do whatever he's doing with me. Prabhupada is in the spiritual world, but Krishna is here in the heart. So between Krishna and Prabhupada, whatever is happening is going on. This principle, it's not that this year this Shiksha Guru and 5 years later that's, it's like Indian marriage, it's a traditional, do or die, this is my wife, I have plenty of service, there's no doubt, service is unlimited, just like preaching and book distribution, anybody, if I ask Radhamab, can I help you? Yeah, he can engage. Everyone can have servants, and Krishna consciousness is unlimited service. That's a nice point. I would like to, because this is an interesting point. It's a very interesting point. I don't feel it's very even clear in the Vaishnava Sangha. It's not so clear to myself, but I can just speak on that's my personal revelation, and the basic understanding I have from what I've read is there's some prominence of the Diksha Guru. There's something about the oneness in tattva and the oneness in mercy, that they're all equal, but all equal UCNCC, it says that Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru, equal representations of the Absolute Truth. But as you well know, there's a concept of one and different. Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. So they're equal, but they're different. Like Krishna says, I am Guru. Guru is me. Acharya Mam Bijaniyam. I am Guru. But he also says, Guru is more than me. And there's also a verse that says, Guru Devatma. It says, the Guru should be my very Atma. There's some amazing verses in 11th canto about, and you look in those purports and say, this refers to the Diksha Guru. So there are many verses, and if I believe so, and you can confirm this about the Guru Devatma, that means every Guru is Devatma. You have so many Atmas. As far as I understand it, it means the Diksha Guru. I mean, maybe in this book of this Shlokamrita, you can see maybe verses in there also. But when the Prabhupada's disciples were with Shiksha Gurus, they felt that Prabhupada had, like you just said, like Prabhupada had sent these Shiksha Gurus to them because they needed some guidance, in the absence of Prabhupada, because he wasn't physically here to instruct them. So that was also a specific circumstance to that Shiksha Guru wasn't here. And that they were like floundering, and there's no shelter. Okay, the books are there, but I want some personality to connect with. So then they were looking for. I want to connect with Prabhupada, but and I can't do it so much by my meditation. And many did, and I've done so much that way also. So then some went to Shiksha Gurus, and they felt, well, this is the Prabhupada has come to save me with this Shiksha Guru. So that's similar to what you're saying, that the Shiksha Guru manifests. As a Shiksha Guru, tattvas are unlimited. And if anyone, like I have this phrase that always be a teacher, always be a student. Yes. Always be humble enough to learn, because it's unlimited. Who can say they know Krishna? Or these tattvas are unlimited. And Guru tattva and Shiva tattva are the most difficult tattvas, according to Acharyas, to understand. They're not easy. And of course, Gaur's prema tattvas. Very difficult also. Gurgadhar Tattva. So this idea that the Diksha Guru and that whole idea of serving and where that concept of like you're hearing from and then you're getting so many gifts of that and then you're feeling grateful and you want to express your gratitude by service. And that's part of a Guru Shishya relationship, humility, inquiry and seva. Tavadi pranipatena parimashanya seva. So the seva itself is follow the teachings, that's one seva, which I mentioned when I was describing my relationship. And then I don't know if there's any particular definition where it says, yes, you should serve this much, or you should. You know, I drew the line because I didn't want to be at risk, I would might diminish my service to Prabhupada. Because if you offer yourself, I'm here to serve you, okay, we'll do this, then all of a sudden you're 24/7. Yes. And then.
So you give clarity.
And that's okay, because many disciples of Prabhupada, they were, Prabhupada's in the spiritual world, and they were outside of ISKCON. And they became, their life and soul was became serving that Shiksha Guru.
Yes,
and you can't say there's something wrong with that. Maybe they should have taken Shiksha and served ISKCON or whatever, but many didn't. So that's a different circumstance, as I mentioned. And but the Guru said, the Diksha Guru, kind of, he's the father, and so the father is always, takes preeminence, I would think so. And the father says, yeah, live with the uncle. And the uncle says, look, I'll take care of him. He says, yeah, great. He should clear his account with the first guru, that am I fully pleasing you? Is there anything left? Is there anything more? It's like when Lord Chaitanya Chandradaya, Lord Chaitanya said, wait till you invited me, you begged for me to come down. Is there anything more you want me to do? And I ask him about this verse also. It's the last verse. He said, yes, can you give everyone Vrindavan Swarups or something like that? It's a little esoteric verse. It's not, can you give everyone on this planet or all your followers Swarups in Vrindavan? No matter, even though they're Stai Rati, maybe Vaikuntha or whatever. So he said, yes, that so be it or whatever. It's a little bit, this is a little controversial verse. But in other words, I just use that as an example, that Lord Chaitanya wanted to clear his accounts. Okay, I want to return. I want to go back to the spiritual world. Wait, can I go now? Is there anything else I have to do? You call me down to liberate all the Jagai and Madais. I did that and established Dharma, whatever. And so the same thing. If you want to be with the Shiksha Guru, then you ask the Diksha Guru, are you fully pleased? Is there anything I should do? No, I want you to do this. Then say, no, I'm busy with my Shiksha Guru. Then I don't think that would go over well. With Krishna, doesn't seem like it. But I would like more praman with verses about we can show a few verses about the equality of Shiksha and Diksha Guru, but I would like to see if there's also difference, because usually and everywhere there's some oneness and difference. There's the rule and the exception to the rule. Especially in this philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And Guru Tattva is so deep, because it has to be a Chintya Veda Beta Tattva. There must be simultaneous oneness and difference. As I have pointed, one distinct difference, that Krishna's Acharya Mam Vijaniyam. Krishna says, I am the Acharya, the Acharya is me, Guru is God, God is Guru. So they're one, but the Guru is more, because the Kripa Shakti of Krishna is with the Guru. The Kripa Shakti Murti is the Guru. And Krishna's given the Guru more than him. If you say Guru and Krishna are one, but they're one and different. Because they're different in the sense that the Acharya is carrying, you have all the money. No, she has the money. No, but it's your money. So the Kripa is with the Guru. So if you want the Kripa, Krishna, give me mercy. Hey, go to the Guru. So in the same point about there must be some oneness and difference between Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru. Krishna's mercy is follows the devotee. It will say Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni, he got angry at Ambarish for drinking water before he fed him or something like that. Break his fast in time. And then the chakra started chasing Durvasa. And then he went to Vishnu. Vishnu, give me Kripa. Kripa Karo. Call off your chakras. Hey, I can't do anything for you. The mercy is with Ambarish. Right? He said, you offended him. And, if you want to get the mercy, you have to go back there. Get forgiven for your offense. He has to give you he has to be merciful to you. He has to be merciful to you. And if he doesn't show his mercy to you, I don't have the power to show mercy to you, and I don't have the power to call back my chakra. So in that case, the guru is greater than God. Yes. Ambarish is a guru in that case, the guru bhakti principle. Don't offend devotees. So the gurus are giving the same mail. the same message. Well, Shiksha Gurus, they nourish. That's all. You know, the Bhakti Lata is growing. And so the Guru plants the Bhakti Lata, then he gets Shiksha and nourishes it. And other Shiksha Gurus get more nourishment and nourishes it. It's like a supermarket. If your Shiksha Guru is so learned and realized, you get everything there. And don't need to go anywhere. Or don't feel any need to go anywhere. So I have godbrothers like that. They were getting everything from Prabhupada. They didn't go anywhere, just Prabhupada's books and Prabhupada. And some went to get some more nourishment. And they collected nourishment and then, you know. But they're with Prabhupada. That's like my example. I'm not with the missions of my Shiksha Gurus or with them. They're in my heart and I have gratitude for them, appreciation, and speak well of them. And I remember them. But my heart and soul is the Prabhupada. It's nice, because this Guru Tattva is the most confusing, bewildering topic in the marketplace anyway. So if you want to do a nice contribution, you could write a nice essay. So see, you're with a good source of input on this idea, so you can collect a lot of ideas. If that is a fact, let's try to understand it, because I would like to understand myself more. I mean, it's clear for me in my own realizations and line of thought and actions, but there's one thing, you can understand what to do, but to teach it and preach it to others, then you may need so much praman. And like someone says, I'm just serving my guru. Well, why? I don't know, I just serve. The person he's maybe illiterate, he's a simple person, but I just know one thing, Krishna is God, and I'm supposed to serve him, and this is his representative. So that person will attain perfection, because he doesn't have that. He's not a pracharak, and he's. But if you want to be a pracharak, then you have to have quite a bit of knowledge. So this particular point, I don't consider myself very strong with all the verses and the praman that. Just off the top of my head, I can go and do a bunch of research, because I know where a lot of these things are. Mm-hmm. I believe so, but it'll be nice homework for you. And then, of course, you're giving classes, so this is a very interesting and attractive topic. And it'll be nice. I would like to. I know, and wrap it up here, interesting 5-minute discussion we had. To wrap it up, is that I remember one guru in ISKCON, he had a disciple going to a Shiksha Guru. And he's still here, and the disciple's still here, and the Shiksha Guru, and the Shiksha Guru, everyone's there. No, Shiksha Guru's not here. He said, listen, can I have blessings? Yes, you have my blessings to go there. But please, bring whatever good things you find, bring back to me. I really like that. And a guru from 1960s, I mean, one of the old original gurus. And he said like that. He said, if you get some good things, don't, what about me? Like someone says, oh, Father, I want to go work in this bakery. Can I work there? Yeah, you go there. But can you bring me a cake once in a while? I want a little commission. So sure, you have my full blessings to go there. And then that disciple went. He came to India and he lived with that person. And became quite close and did a lot of seva. Because he asked, can I, everything, he was clear with his Diksha Guru, and Diksha Guru had lots of disciples, so one here or there doesn't matter. And so that disciple thrived, and he's doing quite well even today, and Guru's doing everyone's doing quite well. So this is the win-win situation in the spiritual dimension. There's no losers here. If you're a genuine sadhaka and you're associating with genuine sadhus of the bhakti school, you can't go wrong. So whom you're associating with is certainly, I have no adhikar to even measure or speak about or pass any judgment on by any means or any standard myself. But from what I can see, it's certainly great Siddha Saint of Vrindavan and a great devotee, Bhakta, Radha Krishna Bhakta. So how can anyone say that's not good. He's not good association. I'm being foolish. It's a little austere sometimes. We come from different parts of India where sometimes these ideas are not appreciated. But we have to see the higher synthesis of things and maintain a very broad mind. But at the same time, it's very interesting how to have a broad mind and how to be broad-minded and at the same time be institutional. Because Prabhupada established the type of institution and requires an institution means you consider your institution, which will tend to narrow the mind, the mind view. So to live in an institution, if you look at the seven reasons for founding ISKCON, Prabhupada said to create a non-sectarian spiritual movement for the propagation of God consciousness. And in the old days, there was much more broader viewpoint of things. So now sometimes it's become a little narrow. Non-sectarian, I mean, it could be a much more open spiritual paradigm out there. I want more clarity on the tattva myself because I find Guru Tattva has always been very interesting to me. I was always giving classes on Guru Tattva with never any idea that we would be serving as a Diksha Guru. In 1987, I've given so many classes on Guru Tattva because I was always surrounded by devotees. I never really preached so much to the non-devotee class. I've always been with the initiated devotees of other gurus. Not so much with God brothers. There are not too many of them, and they're scattered far and wide. And they certainly don't need to hear from me. But all disciples of all the ISKCON gurus, and this is the biggest dilemma in everyone's mind, the guru, the Diksha Guru, I don't have faith in my guru, and this and that. So I was always building faith and encouraging them and showing all the verses and lots of discussions. And it's a very attractive, interesting subject. And even today I find as soon as you think you know something about any tattva, tomorrow you realize that you didn't know that much about that tattva. It's an interesting point when we're preaching tattva, guru tattva, especially if the preacher has a guru. And he's been, because everything you're doing, I've already done. I've done, but I've come to a certain realization myself how to adjust it all. Now that's my viewpoint and my outlook, and that doesn't mean that's the only outlook or viewpoint on the subject or way to move. That should be understood also. So that's why we say my realization, but realizations based on Shastra and that are correct and pramanic are true and valid, but there can be many realizations that are true and valid based on the praman. You look at Brihad Bhagavatamritam, and there's so many hierarchies and levels of spiritual domains and levels of devotees, and they're all to themselves, they're truthful, they're the truth. The sages at Tapaloka and the Pipalaya Muni and talking about meditation, the Gopa Kumar, and that see the Lord within you. And he said, no, I want to see him with my eyes. The Gopa Kumar says, I want to see him sakshat. Well, independence is that, I mean, not you can live independently, but it's the independence that you're not continually surrendering to the orders of both. Diksha and Shiksha Guru may be giving orders and suggestions for bhajan. And the independence is when you don't follow, when you choose not to follow those orders. Because the guru is always with the disciple. Like Prabhupada is, I'm living alone, you could say. And I like this point because I was going to Shiksha Gurus and hearing from them, and I didn't want to do that because I have a lot of some talents that would be. I had talents that would be useful to them. Editing their books, etc. And I didn't volunteer myself for that because I was working on my own books. I wanted to maintain my independent position. I wanted to collect the shiksha and do service as per my discretion because I didn't feel a need because I didn't feel I have to surrender to him and to him. I surrendered once absolutely to one Diksha Guru, and he's Krishna for me. And every Krishna's gonna, all the Krishna's, every mercy, everything's going to come through him. And these other Diksha Gurus, they're helping me with that relationship. That's the way I took it, and that's why I lived it. So I never faced it. I drew the line. I said, I want to maintain my independence because Prabhupada is there. And I saw all around me many disciples that just threw everything there. And in one level, it seems that they forgot Prabhupada. And I would be with those disciples, and they never speak about Prabhupada. So I was thinking, well, this seems strange. And they would always be talking about their new guru, and he said, and he said, and he said, and he said, and never anything of Prabhupada said. And so I didn't appreciate that. So that can be the tendency. Oh, you know, so-and-so said, and then two or three disciples get together, and they end up just talking about their Shiksha Guru, and the Shiksha Guru is, forget about him. So I, myself, Prabhupada, the fire of my guru's light is always burning in my heart.